All right. Wow. Man, I love the Elms. Don't they rock? They rock. They rock.
That was very groovy.
That was very groovy.
The Elms much groovy. Rockage.
With me tonight, returning one last time, it's Revenge of the Sith, Kidge.
Hey, that's coming out in 3D next year.
Awesome. I can't wait. And to my left, the Phantom Menace, Robert.
Oh. I liked it. Not Jar Jar, but I liked it.
I did too. I think people are crazy. Yeah. All right. Tonight we're going to be studying teleology. No, that was last week. Veritology, another ology. So hold on tight, buckle your seatbelts, put on your fuzzy buzzies and slippers. Here we go. All right. Veritology. I'll tell you right now, it's a made-up word. It's not a real word. Don't get too excited.
How is it not a real word?
Well, it's one of those words, if you look at it in the dictionary, it's not there. That's why it's a made-up word. But
worldly dictionary or a biblical dictionary?
Either one. But it is a valid word. It's one of these words where they take two Latin words and jam them together to describe what the subject's about.
That's called science. They do it all the time. I think it's
that
valid.
Is true.
Oh, right. It is true. Listen to Kidge.
Well, veritology is a word, veritas, which is the Greek word for truth, and ology, which means the study of. So this is the study of truth. Ta-da!
Ta-da!
Yay! And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about truth. And, it's odd because in our modern society, it has taken on some unique qualities, this idea of truth. And we're going to talk about that. There's an entire project, which I highly recommend. It's called the Truth Project. It was put out by Focus on the Family. And I think there's 12 videos, and they're about they're about an hour long. And you can go to thetruthproject.org and get some information on them. You have to buy the videos. They're not, but you can see clips of them. They have clips of them available. And you can tell they're very high quality, very well done. They have interviews on there the whole series follows some Christians and some non-Christians and their ideas on different subjects. And they also have interviews with people like Ravi Zacharias and R.C. Sproul and people like this. So they bring in them as well. It's a classroom setting. It's very well done. And it's very thorough. And it takes a whole look at this idea of what truth has become in our modern society, or our modern culture, our modern philosophy, which is the postmodern philosophy, and what the biblical view of truth is. And so it's a very good series, and I highly recommend it. Some of the ideas...
I like that one kid in the Truth Project.
Yes, he's awesome.
Yeah.
Everybody who's seen it knows what kid you're talking about. He's like a, I guess he's like a 12-year-old kid, but he's like the smartest guy on the planet or something.
He's not so much anymore.
he's a savant. He's not so much anymore?
Yeah, I'm looking him up. His name is Kyle West, and this picture looks like he's a football player now.
Oh, okay.
What?
He's not a kid anymore. That's what he meant. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you meant he's not so smart anymore because he plays football.
Yeah, I thought he meant something like that. Oh boy. Okay. Well, so for our a Christian view, or a what we want to call a traditional view of truth, is that truth is that which conforms to reality. Now, all through history, there has been an argument about truth. And it's really more of an argument about logic. And so people a lot of times will discuss this under epistemology. And that is the idea that you can't know. You really can't know anything. And I believe it was Sartre that investigated this. He's the one that doubted everything. And what he found out in the end was that he's one of the famous saying, "I think, therefore I am." Mm-hmm. Well, that's really sort of a mistranslation of what he came out with, because what he really came up with was, "I doubt, therefore I am." Because he could doubt everything. He could doubt that he existed. He could doubt that he could know anything. He could doubt that what he was seeing was real, that it wasn't an illusion, that he wasn't laying on a table somewhere imagining everything. He could doubt everything except for the fact that he was doubting. He couldn't get past the fact that I am doubting.
Yeah, it's like you can never really know anything. How do you know?
Right. So there's somebody in here that's doubting something, so therefore I exist. And from that, I can extrapolate the fact that something can be known. And if something can be known, then we can develop criteria for knowing. And so he developed it from there. But that's really not what we're going into tonight. What I want to talk about is not so much how we know things, but what truth is. And we're going to define truth as that which conforms to reality. So if I told you that the sky outside right now, all over the world, is yellow, right? Then you would know if I was telling the truth, because you could go outside, look up at the sky, and say, no, where I'm standing, it's blue. Or where I'm standing, it's black, right?
Mm-hmm. Where I'm standing, it is yellow.
Well, there you go.
You have an air quality issue in your city.
Yeah.
Either that or angels have peed on your part of the world. So, oh, so that, so what we're saying is, whatever reality is, I mean, in the classroom, I use an example where I take a towel and I put it over, I have a little miniature globe, and I take a towel and I put it over this globe and before any of the students come in. And I have everybody guess what's under the towel. And I say, you can make certain assumptions. You, for instance, know it's not a car, a full-size car, because it wouldn't fit under the towel. You know it's not a bird, because it's been sitting there for, you know, since you came in and it hasn't moved. You know it's not, you know, probably a live animal. You know that, for instance, that it's not a liquid. You know, so at least if it is, it's in a glass. You know, it's in something. So there's certain assumptions you can make about it, but you can't really know. So everybody tries, you know, to guess. And then I take the towel off, and we all see that it's a globe. And I said, now what I did was I revealed the truth to you. You all had a guess. You all had a perception. You could perceive certain things about it. But in the end, I had to reveal the truth to you. And that's the way the truth works in Christianity. We depend upon the Lord to reveal truth to us. We can make certain assumptions. We can know a lot about the world that's around us. But in the end, we depend upon the Lord to reveal truth to us. And that's the way he's set it up to be. Now, truth, however, in Christianity is very important. In fact, it's central in the Bible to many things. For instance, Jesus came to earth. Okay, he came to earth as God's begotten Son, and God sent him in John 3:16 because he loved us. But his purpose in coming is very interesting, and it comes about in John 18:37. Robert, do you have that to read?
No, I just got the notes before we started the show. So let me.
Well, in John 18:37, mm-hmm. Let me set the scene while he's looking that up. This is because I want to tell you how important this is. Jesus is fixing to die, and this is not something that is easy for him to do. This is not just, I mean, even though dying is not something anybody just looks forward to, and this is a particular kind of death that he is very stressed out about. He just came from a garden where he was so stressed out about this that he even, the only time in the Bible we see him asking the Lord for something, that it not be done. You know, I want your will to be completed. And he said that. He said, Lord, I want you, and Father, I want your will be done. But if there's any way I don't have to do this, please, I don't want to do it. And it's the only time in the Bible we see that. And it says that in one gospel, it says that he was so upset that he was sweating blood. He was so, so stressed out. And then he's facing this death, and it's not just they're going to chop his head off or he's going to get a lethal injection. No, we're talking about being beat to a pulp. We're talking about humiliation. We're talking about torture. We're talking about mocking. And then an agonizing, long, prolonged death. This is not a quick thing. This is very painful. But it's not just that even. It's also the fact that he was going to take on the sins of the world. He was placing the sins, the shameful, the all that stuff that he was going to take that on himself. And he is part of God. So to do this is so huge, so profound, and so hard and so torturous. He's going to separate himself from God because once he takes these sins upon himself, it's going to be, you know, my God, why have you forsaken me? Is what he screams when this actually happens in the end. So he's getting ready to go to this. And that's the encounter that we find in John 18:37. Go ahead.
Then Pilate said to him, "So you are king?" Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice."
And Pontius's reply was, in the next verse,
"What is truth?"
Right. And nothing's changed. The world still questions truth.
Yeah. Nowadays, if you try and proclaim something to be true or not true, you're automatically branded intolerant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or closed-minded.
Right. Right.
Right.
And closed-minded, it's like, okay, 1 + 1 = 2, and it can only equal 2. Well, that's very closed-minded. Well, but I got to the conclusion.
Yeah, right.
Right. Don't argue with me. Argue with math, you know? I mean, I get in trouble when I say certain things are sin. I say, well, this the Bible calls this sin. Well, that's, you're being very hateful, you know? And I'm like, no. I'm not being hateful. Just because you do this doesn't mean I hate you. I'm just telling you that the Bible says this action is sin. And they can't get their minds around that. They're very closed-minded when it comes to their own version of truth, right? Mm. And they'll say, well, that may be true for you, but it's not true for me.
Oh, I hate that one.
Well, no, we can have perspectives and we can have opinions. And in fact, we can even build doctrines or ethics that can be separate from one another. But the truth is the truth. The truth is, regardless of perception, it is from divine perception. In other words, the way it truly is, the way God sees it, is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So Jesus came to proclaim this. He came, that is the purpose. He saved our souls. He died for our sins. He's about to go do these things that are so awesome. But that is not what he said his stated purpose in coming was. His stated, even though he taught all these great things, he healed all these people, he fulfilled prophecy, and says he set the captives free. But he accomplished all these wonderful things that have changed the world forever. But his purpose in coming was tied to the truth. And he says that we are tied to the truth in the same passage. It says those how does it word it again?
Those who are of the truth listen to my voice, there I think is what it says.
Right. So if we're going to be of truth, we need to pay attention to what Jesus says. And because that's why he came. Is to bear witness to the truth. And the truth is, as he proclaimed, is that we can know God. All we have to do is believe that he is the Son of God, believe that he died for our sins, repent of our own sins, and take upon and accept the forgiveness that he offers us. And we covered that in the gospel a couple of weeks ago, 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we've looked a little bit at truth, and how important it is, and what it is. But now let's look at the opposite of it, because Jesus has some things to say about that as well. The Bible has some things to say about that. And that is that the first sin of man was what? What was the first thing that happened? You know, Jesus called the devil, he called him the... a liar from the beginning, and in John 8:44, he said, and he was the father of lies. What did he mean by father of lies? That means he gave birth to lying. he was the father of lies. He started it all. And it was the fact that man believed the lie of the devil that was the first sin. You know, when he approached Eve in the garden, the serpent approached Eve in the garden. We found out later that that was the devil. But when he approached Eve in the garden, he started off with asking her a question that she knew the answer to, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then, he started this conversation, which was a trick, by the way, because you're in the garden and a snake's talking to you, but also guess who else is in the garden? God is in the garden with you. Right?
Yeah.
So the first thing you should do is not enter into a conversation with the snake, but go tell God the snake's talking, right? I mean, that's just common
sense. I don't know this in the manual.
Right. Lord, hey, there's a snake over here talking. I don't know. That doesn't seem right. But instead, he asks her a question she knows the answer to. So he plays on her pride. He plays a trick on her. Gets her in a conversation with him and then tells her a flat-out lie. Hey, God doesn't want you to eat this because you'll be just like him. And then it says, it kind of implies that the snake takes a bite of this fruit too. It doesn't say that, but what it says is when she saw that it was good to eat. Mm. Well, does that mean the devil took a bite first? And hey, I see, I didn't die. I don't know. We don't know. But
that's a good point.
It does say that when she saw it was good to eat, she took a bite. So she believed the lie. And all sin is wrapped around this idea, or is tied to being taken captive by a lie. And that's from 2 Timothy 2:26 and Colossians 2:8.
Okay.
I'm not saying that's what sin is, but I'm saying that's how we fall into sin, is being taken captive by a lie. And so now the lies are even about truth in modern, postmodern culture, because they say truth is relative. You know, that they equate truth to perspective. If you see a rock and if from a distance, and it looks like a dog, and then there's somebody on the other side of the rock, on the other side of the, say it's on a hill, and on the other side of the hill, there's another guy, and he's looking at the rock, and to him it looks like an elephant. Well, so is that your truth? Is your truth that rock is an elephant? No, that's just your perception. The truth is, it's a rock. So we have to trust in the divine perception that God knows the truth, and that the truth from his perception is actual truth, and that has to be revealed to us. Otherwise we are bound by our perception. But modern culture says, well, there is no God, so all we have is our perception. Therefore it's only, most modern teaches that it's only in your culture, a community. So your community perceives truth, and that is true for your community. And individuals perceive truth, and those truths are true for you. So you make up, basically they're saying, you make up your own philosophy, and then you have certain rules and ethics within your culture. Well, this falls apart because there are certain truths that are true for everybody. C.S. Lewis argued this way before the postmoderns ever came up with it, but he talked about somebody cuts in front of you in line. Nope. Every culture believes that's wrong, right?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Or every culture on the planet, even cultures who are raiding parties, who have developed a culture of raiding and stealing from other tribes, still have rules and ethics within their tribe that they don't take from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So there's
the Pirate's Code. I saw that there in the movie.
Exactly. But it's true of Indian tribes. Every tribe that we've, you know, every culture we've ever found, stealing, even with, you know, within the culture itself, is still considered to be wrong. So is murder. There's been lots of cultures who kill or make sacrifice to gods and kill, and then raid other tribes and kill people in the other tribes. But murdering for selfish gain within the community is wrong in every tribe, in every culture, in every community. And so if you have these things that are global, even the Nazis, you know, they killed millions and millions of people, but they didn't. But they didn't hold to killing each other. When somebody tried to kill Hitler, he got really mad, didn't he?
Oh yeah, how dare you trying to kill me?
Right. So thick. Right. So regardless of the culture, we have this overriding sense of fair sense of right and wrong. Hey, that's not fair. And so it's not community based. It's not culturally based. We know for a fact, because we can look at history, we can look at society and know that there is these built-in overriding right and wrongs, moral ethics. And if there is a moral law, there has to be a moral law writer, a moral law giver. And that's the character of God. That is God. God, we already set up that in our premise when we established in the first couple of episodes when we talked about the principles that God set up based on loving God and loving each other, that those were his characteristics. They weren't arbitrary. He didn't just decide that killing is wrong or stealing is wrong and by the flip of a coin, but it spoke of his actual character. And so, same way with truth. Jesus came to bear witness to the truth. In fact, in another place, he actually says, "I am the truth," which is pretty profound. Mm. So, truth is important, and we shouldn't let our society and our current culture and philosophy rob us of that. I presented this in class. In fact, just today, I talked about this in class, and we talked about the law of non-contradiction. Now, I don't want to get into too much of logic right now. I just wanted to touch on this because I was talking about a table, and I said the table is either. The law of non-contradiction says that one thing cannot be true and untrue at the same time in the same way. And a good example of that is I am a father, I am a son, but I'm not a father and a son to the same person. I'm a father and a son at the same time, but not in the same way. So that's just an easy example. But I gave them another one and I said and I gave it to them on purpose. A table cannot be brown and blue at the same time in the same way. And all of a sudden, they all started arguing. They just erupted. Well, yeah, it could be striped. You could have it, and it would be brown and it would be brown and blue at the same time. I'm like, no, but it wouldn't be brown and blue in the same way. In other words, it all can't be brown and it all can't be blue at the same time. And they would argue, well, you could paint it brown and then paint blue on top of it. So it's really brown underneath, but blue on top. They had all these arguments.
What's interesting is that there's something deep inside of us, like you said before, the C.S. Lewis thing, that we want to have fairness, okay? Mm-hmm. And then we went so far as to invent philosophy to try and explain these things. Mm-hmm. And then we came up with science to try and explain everything. And yet, there's also something in us that tries to argue around all of that so right. that we can still get what we want. You know what I mean?
yeah. Uh-huh. Right. And that's my point is these people just all of a sudden erupted in arguments about it because they were like, no. I'm like, well, hey, the law of contradiction cannot be broken. It's not my law. I didn't write it. You can come up with all these scenarios and it's still going to be the same thing. It can't be true and untrue in the same way at the same time. Can't be. And, but it's amazing how much they'll argue about it, because we naturally, it's like you say, we naturally have a moral ethic built inside of us. We know right from wrong on some level all the time. Everybody who's ever lived knows right from wrong unless they're seriously broken in their head. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we rebel against it. At the same time, we're fallen and we rebel against this idea that we're going to be held to this right and wrong. And so we naturally want to argue it. Well, anyway, so there you have a look. Postmodernism. We'll try to do we'll try to do a whole show on just postmodernism and what it teaches and what it means. But just know that the current culture is very adverse to absolute truth or truth that is not relative. That they consider that to be intolerant. They consider it to be even if absolute truth exists, you can't know it, they would say. Who are you to tell me what absolute truth is? And it's true. We need to be careful about throwing absolute truth at people or saying, it's okay to quote the Bible, but don't quote the Bible at people. Even the Bible tells us that we're to lead people to Christ, or we're to instruct even our brothers and sisters in love. We're to correct in love. We're to discipline in love. Don't forget the in love part. So don't forget to lie. If you're telling somebody what they're doing is a sin, first of all, don't be hypocritical and make sure you don't have a log in your own eye. But at the same time, be sure you're communicating that you love them. Hey, I'm telling you that this is leading to something bad because I love you. And I'm telling you that, you know, that God loves you too. You know, just because I'm saying that this thing you've chosen to be your identity, you know, I am a gambler. And there's nothing wrong with that. And that's my identity. Well, okay, but, you know, you're really more than that. You know, God has you, has much more value on you than just this one thing that you've chosen to identify yourself as. So I love you. God loves you. Why don't we look at a bigger picture? And so just keep in mind, well, as you get a hold and as you start to, you know, Jesus says, if those who know truth hear my voice. And another place he says, those who hear my voice keep my commandments. Don't turn into Mr. Legalistic preach, you know, preacher who's all of a sudden condemning everybody else. That's not what we're supposed to do with truth, is it? We're supposed to be saying truth in love, speaking grace. In another place it says speak grace. So the truth leads to love. Don't forget the love part. Remember our basic two principles that, that Jesus said the whole Bible is built on, loving each other and loving God. All right, that's all I have to say about truth tonight. Thank you all.
Man, I was just getting started. I'd love this stuff.
Well, good. I'm glad.
The law of the excluded middle. I want to talk about that next time.
You can talk about it. Right. We're in after chat now, so you can talk about whatever you want to.
Okay.
The one, you know what? The one thing I understand, there's three basic laws of logic. The law of non-contradiction. I get that. The law of identity. I get that. That means an object is the same of itself, or A equals A all the time, or A absolutely equals A. Isn't that what it means?
Mm-hmm.
So, but then you get the law of the excluded middle. You want to explain that one to me, Mr. I took philosophy and I took logic in college.
Well, I'm still reading. I thought you were going to explain it to us, so I was wanting to, you know, hear. Okay.
Well, I know that it means no ambiguity.
Apparently, number one, it says no ambiguity.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I think we got that. Okay. The question of can a thing be and not be in name? What?
I just wrote that down because that's what it said about it when I looked it up. But I don't understand this one. The law of the excluded middle. I don't think I have a good grasp on what it means. Can you give us a good example?
I have no idea. I've never read this before.
Oh, okay. I thought you said you took it in college.
He is a mouse. He is just a man after all. What? He is not a man. He is a mouse. He is just a man after all.
It means that you're not saying the man is a mouse. You're saying the man is a man. But I don't know. That's why I don't know. I don't have a good grasp of the excluded middle yet.
I think it means metaphors are illogical. I don't know.
Well, we'll have to do some research before we go into that. I have a good grasp.
Have brought it up. Very
no,
good.
Yeah,
very
I thought good. You understood it, so I was asking. No, I got the first two laws down pretty good, but that third one kind of blows me away. I don't really grasp it yet. The Lord hasn't revealed it to me yet. How's that?
Oh,
there you go.
So here is the example for the excluded middle thing.
Okay.
You can say Schrodinger's cat is dead or Schrodinger's cat is alive. But that leaves that there's a third position where he's either where the cat is neither alive or dead. And that's just excluded because of logic. Unless, of course, it's Schrodinger's cat. Like I said, in which case it is alive and dead at the same time. Oh. So that's a bad example.
Or he is a zombie.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Schrodinger's cat, for those of you who don't know, that's the story of the cat that's in the box. And there's poison milk in the box. And you know the cat's going to drink the milk and you know it's going to die. So until you open the box and look, the cat's alive.
No, I don't buy it. That's the tree falling in the woods, and it still makes a sound because physics doesn't change because you didn't witness it.
I know,
it.
But that was Schrodinger's argument.
I hate those things.
That was Schrodinger's. That was Schrodinger's argument.
P equals NP.
But it's an argument about the postmodern position. It was a postmodern argument. In other words, until you perceive the cat is dead, the cat is not dead, and that's not true, is it? The cat's dead.
See, but that puts us in the center. Of
that's right.
Knowledge. That and puts, I do not put myself there.
Right. And that's why we talk about that's when we talk about truth being that which conforms to reality from a divine perspective. Uh-huh. So truth is from a divine perspective, not from our own perspective. And postmodern denies that because there is no God, so we're all little gods. So truth isn't truth until we perceive it. Well, that's not true. The cat's dead. The, cat, the cat's dead as soon as it drinks the milk, whether we know it or not.
Uh-huh.
And that,
plus, there are empirical things like in a day it will begin to smell like a dead cat.
Well, that's still, we're perceiving that.
There you go.
Whether you see it or not. So a blind guy, all cats are alive all the time. Is that what it means?
No, basically. No.
Okay.
He was just trying to make an argument about perception.
I am. I hate these things because they're, it's like, you know, it's like, ooh. And it's, no, there's no ooh.
There's no ooh. The cat was
dead.
Use
your logic. Come on. The cat's dead.
Yes. And it seems like people are going way out of their way to try to get around the truth. You know, to try to deny.
Because the truth points out what's wrong with us, period.
Yep. That we are
limited. And nobody likes that.
That's right.
Well, moving on.
Okay, something lighter.
I still don't think I understand the law of excluded middle. But anyway, moving on. Let's talk about excluded middle in baseball and football, right? Because now you have it's baseball season and it's football season, and then you have this weird time when it's both. Is that the law of excluded middle? I don't know.
No, that's the included middle, I think.
Oh, that's
that is. That's a Venn diagram, what you got there.
Yeah, there you go.
So about the time I really get into baseball, about the time baseball gets really good and games start to really matter, football comes along, right? Mm-hmm. Now, in the past, I've been a big football fan. I will have to admit, the biggest football fan. In fact, I don't even want to, don't even get me into baseball because it interrupts football. Because by the time it gets good, I'm already into football, so I don't even want to watch baseball because that's just a distraction. So that's been my past. But the last few years, I'd say the last, I don't know, since Nolan Ryan came back to the Rangers, however long that's been, 4 or 5 years.
Sure.
I've been starting to follow baseball. And so the other thing that happens, I watched that Ken Burns special about baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally understood a bunch of stuff because baseball is complicated. So you kind of got to know, like, what is the infield fly rule? I don't understand. There's a lot of things going on here that I don't ever explain. So I watched this series by Ken Burns. It was a documentary about baseball. It's really good. Anything Ken Burns does is good. So I watched that, and that got me into baseball, and I really enjoyed baseball. And then football came along and would destroy it. And then I would, and then I would try to follow. And then it got, then my team, the Rangers, started doing good. They started having an October and a November where they were going to the World Series, and so I was trying to watch both. I was watching football and baseball. But football is very discouraging to me because
unfortunately, you're a Cowboys fan, very frustrating. Like I am. But you know, so I wish I was a baseball fan too.
But to be honest, aren't most football fans frustrated? And hey, listen, the Rangers have had, you know, they've gone into the series, but they haven't won. So, but I don't feel as frustrated. I'm sad that the season's over, but I'm not mad at the Rangers. I'm not as emotional. Like with the Cowboys, it's like almost like somebody killed my dog when they lose, you know? Like, what's going on?
Gosh, man.
Yeah, it's bad.
It like ruins your whole day, you know. It's like
it does.
So I said, you know what? I don't need that kind of stress in my life. So last year, I decided I'm going to not watch the Cowboys. I think this is a Cowboy thing. I think I'm too wrapped up in this. It's, you know, it goes back to my childhood. I'm only going to watch other football games. I'm only going to watch other teams play. I'm still going to follow the Cowboys. I'm going to check on their score the next day, but I'm not going to watch their games because it just upsets me. And says that they lose more than they win, so I'm, you know, it's really going to ruin my day. So last year I watched other games, and that was better. It was better, but you know, I don't know. So this year, okay. So that leads to this year. So this year I haven't watched any football.
Me neither.
I've only watched baseball, and baseball is every night, and if you lose, it doesn't matter because they're going to play tomorrow night. You know? It's greatness, and it goes on forever, and it's slow paced, but you hang on every pitch, and so there's tension, but there's relax, and you can have a conversation while you watch it, and I never stand up and yell at the screen, but I do get excited when they do something good. I don't know. I think maybe it's a maturity thing. Maybe it's I'm getting old. My heart can't take football anymore. I don't know what it is, but I'm really enjoying football, and baseball.
Yes.
And I haven't watched any football this year, and I haven't missed it. But the frustrating part is that football is so popular. We're going into the playoffs of baseball, and nobody's talking about it. You turn on the sports radio, they're talking about football all the time. They hardly even mention baseball. And our team's I'm like in Dallas, where Texas Rangers are. We're going to the World Series, and nobody's talking about it. All they're talking about is how bad the Cowboys are doing. So,
because not many people watch, you know, baseball.
But baseball is sold out. Every game is sold out.
I think a lot of people follow it in, like, the next day when they check the scores. But the games are all throughout the week, and they're during the day, and it's just
it's
not something that you can really follow all the time.
But I think it's kind of changing. I think this is changing because I think it's just me. And maybe it has to do with the fact that the Rangers are winning and the Cowboys aren't. Maybe that's part of it. But when I went to the state fair last week with the school, I noticed that there was tons of people wearing Ranger uniforms, Ranger shirts, Ranger jerseys, Ranger t-shirts. Very few Cowboys. And man, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, it was 90% Cowboys. You know, I mean, everybody had on a Romo jersey. And now it's mostly Rangers. So that's kind of weird.
Well, and it's always Longhorns too, right?
No.
Man, when I was in San Antonio, everyone had.
It's because you were horns. Closer to UT than you were.
Yeah, you were in San Antonio.
Well, but yeah, I don't know. It's usually UT.
Okay.
I think they're the more popular ones.
Well, yeah. I see more horns than
the crowds that I hang out with.
Well, that's the crowds true. That you hang out with.
He doesn't have maybe crowds.
Geeks. Oh, okay, got it. Well, I know, yeah.
There's more horns than my uncle else. To UT. Yeah, there are more
my,
horns
than my else, cousin-in-law goes to UT, but the rest of my wife's family will proudly raise their thumb and tell you to gig them.
Yeah.
Here in the background.
I just heard a cheer in the background.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that there's a shift. I think there's a shift going on, and I think people are moving back to baseball. But my main point here is that we should split the seasons. There should never be two, and there's only three major sports, right? Maybe four if you count hockey, but who's counting hockey anymore? So if you say let's say there's four, and we count hockey, okay?
Mm-hmm.
NASCAR does not count.
Nope. Well, that's year round,
because
much.
It's year round.
Take like a month off or something.
Exactly. That doesn't count. So let's just talk about the four team sports, four major team sports. You got baseball, hockey, football, and what I leave out? Hockey, football, baseball.
That would be basketball.
Basketball. Thank you. So I think you should arrange this so that each team they all get 3 months.
What? No.
Sure.
You can't do that.
You can have all 3 months at the same time. That way you can just get
The boys of summer, three months.
In football, they're only going to play 12 games.
That's the way it used to be. It was fine. Well, the world went around. The world went around just fine.
And you okay, so in baseball, how many games can you play in 3 months?
I don't know, but I'm just saying it would be a better world if we had baseball season, football season, basketball season, and hockey. The world would be a better place.
I think every baseball team should play their division twice, or conference, or league, or whatever it is, and then have the playoffs. That's it. There's too many games.
That's what I like about baseball, though, is there's so many
games.
What's
it, like 114 games?
No, I don't know.
It's over 100. How do you keep track of all that? That's too many.
Well, you know what?
What?
This is what I call a segue. So last week, I read a book.
I don't even like baseball. Go ahead.
162 yes. games.
The book was called Three by Ted Dekker.
Hmm.
Now we are discussing this and not anything boring.
Okay. Gotcha.
So
I think I think Ted Dekker actually pitched for the Orioles in 56, didn't
there
he?
There you go.
Go ahead. Nope.
No. Three is an awesome book. Ted Dekker is a Christian thriller, sci-fi, fantasy writer. More thriller than sci-fi or fantasy that you would think. But Three is a book about the natures of man.
I would say he was a
about
Christian.
About the evils that man can do.
He's sort of a Christian Stephen King.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He has a different perspective on a lot of things than most people that are alive have. So, <Okay. laughs> we can put it that way. But I had not read the book. I had actually, my wife had read the book several years ago when it came out, because mm-hmm. she's a big Ted Dekker fan.
Okay.
But we actually saw the movie when they made it a movie.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, how long? 5 years? Something like that?
Yeah. Something
yeah.
like that.
So
it was a much better
then,
much better book.
I kind of remembered a little bit. I remembered the twist, but I read the entire book second guessing my memory on it. I was like, is that really what happened? No, there's no way. This is so.
Oh, that's great! What a really interesting perspective.
Yeah.
Uh huh. Yeah. So I read the entire book trying to be like, how did the twist actually take place again? Because it doesn't line up. There's no way for the twist to be real except for this part. Yeah, okay, that makes sense. But then that final part, you're like,
yeah,
I didn't really see that coming until it happened.
Well, the thing about the interesting thing about this book Three is it's a much better book than it is a movie, because that's normal. But the thing about it is that doesn't normally happen is the book ruins the movie. You can't watch the movie after reading the book, because the whole thing is, I mean, in the book, you have a lot of other things going on. You got character development. You're really kind of into the story. I could see where you can read the book twice, because you might want to go back over it and go, really? Let me go back over this again. So it's sort of like Sixth Sense. You know, in Sixth Sense, when you find out the twist and you're like, whoa, wait a minute, what? You know?
Yes.
And you go back and you watch the movie again to figure out. Well, it's sort of like that in the book, but the movie's different. When you watch the movie, you know. And everything sort of that, I mean, the twist is the entire movie. So if you already know the twist, the movie is like, yeah, but you don't have those other elements that are in the book. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I don't
think... get into his head.
Right. Sort of exactly.
Yeah, I hear you.
It makes me want to read it again.
Good times.
It's worth reading again.
Yeah.
And I like the way it's spelled. I like the way the book is spelled, you know, THR3E.
Uh-huh. Totally.
That's really cool.
I've since moved on to another book called Firebird by Kathy Tyers, which is an older Christian sci-fi book.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
It's not very often that you see an actual like space opera.
Space opera?
From a Christian perspective.
Firebirds, huh?
Firebird.
By who?
Singular Firebird.
Oh, by who?
Kathy Tyers.
Is it T-I-E-R-E-S?
T-Y-R-E-S.
So,
T-Y-E-R, yeah, right. Yes, Robert, go.
So they sing in the book?
What are you talking about?
Well, sometimes, I mean, you know, you people say the word opera, and I'm confused. Like soap opera,
really,
or like, no?
I don't know why it's called a space opera, but like Star Wars is a space opera, because it's big on a grand scale, and... It's not just...
Robert, I think he's misusing the word opera.
I don't know.
I think you mean epic.
Is that like a rock opera?
Don't you mean,
I don't know.
Don't you mean epic?
No, I think he's right.
Epic.
It's just not
epic.
The way that,
not opera.
That we
epic.
Normally use the word.
Opera.
Like, I think opera. I think, you know, a great big lady who's ending the show singing. Because a fat lady sang.
This tells you the kind of person I am and the culture I grew up in. When I hear the word opera, I think about a guy in giant boots.
Huh?
And really curly hair. Tommy. Wow. I think about Tommy.
Oh. The rock opera musical thing?
Yes. The Who did. Yes. The Who, Tommy. The Who.
The Who?
The Who?
Who?
What? Yes. Well, speaking of Christian sci-fi,
yes,
there is a free book that is being published on Facebook, one chapter at a time, like a series. You know, like a serial. They call that a serial or a series or serial, right?
It's like an opera.
Yeah.
No, it's not like an opera at all.
Okay.
It's just a Christian sci-fi, and it's being released on Facebook, one chapter at a time. Anyway,
that's really interesting.
Thank you. It's called In the Darkness.
Ooh.
And I will post a link to it in the show notes. And it's written by these two great brother authors. I mean, they're legendary in their own minds.
The Brothers Grimm?
No, the Brothers McFadden. This was my brother's idea. It's his project, and I'm helping. So we are writing it together.
Well, what if you don't go to Facebook anymore?
Then you can get it on Google Plus.
What if you don't use the internet for a week?
Then you're not going to get internet books, are you? Because it's an e-book. E standing for internet.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
Nice segue, though.
Yes. Thanks. You know, who on earth would go without internet for a week?
I spent all last week with no internet access. Voluntarily.
That's insane.
Yeah, kind of a big deal. Well, I have to revise that statement because it's not entirely accurate. I spent the entire week with no internet access at home. Because I'm an IT professional, you kind of have to have the internet.
Sorry, I don't have work. Internet.
You have to be able to Google scripts, we're all going to go down. But, right?
Yeah, I spent the entire week with no internet, and it was awesome.
Except Twitter, right?
I tweeted you at work.
Okay.
That one time.
To tell me you weren't going to tweet me anymore.
Right.
Right.
To tell you that I didn't have internet at home and I couldn't record last week.
Okay. So. No, that's weird. Okay, but World of Warcraft, you still did that, right?
Nope.
Oh, no?
I have not played a video game in over 2 weeks.
Whoa.
Are you currently being treated for this?
Wow. No. Did you break all your fingers again?
What was that, Brad, you cut out?
Did you break all your fingers again?
No, they're all still there, all the digits.
So, wow.
No, I just felt compelled that I get all of my entertainment from the internet.
Yes.
All of it. And yes. To a point that I will look up from the internet at 11:30 and exhausted and be like, oh, right, I'm married. That's generally not a good thing.
That's not a good thing.
So I'm spending time to read and to have conversations with my wife.
Okay. But how did you go to the bathroom?
Without the internet.
How do you go to the bathroom without the internet? I don't understand that. I remember the old days.
I'm very efficient when it comes to that. It's in and out.
I don't get it. So you use the pen and paper for the Angry Birds or what?
Yeah, you just draw it out. You do that? And then you just, that's really old school there.
No, Angry Birds actually doesn't require internet access.
No, Robert. Oh, wow. Robert, yes. I remember. It's called crossword puzzles. I remember them.
Oh,
I remember that? You would take the newspaper into the bathroom. Remember newspapers? That's what they were for, to take into the bathroom.
Oh, yeah, right. And Uncle John's bathroom reader.
Oh, yeah, those
now
things
we
are
take
great.
$400 portable devices. Does that make sense?
No. That are very allergic to water.
Not so much.
Oh, so, man.
Yeah. So it was good.
So you didn't get a lot out of it?
Yeah.
Did you learn anything new?
I learned a lot about myself and about the Lord.
Did you find yourself?
And about how the Lord is not about myself.
I have to take a break from the internet to find myself.
Yeah. BRB. So, this is like the first time I've had my computer on for more than 5 minutes in the past week and a half.
Well, thank you for joining us for that. Are you going to continue this fast?
I'm going to continue not being addicted to the internet anymore.
So, have you had any good conversations with your wife since then?
Yeah.
All right.
Awesome.
Well, she was also out of town all last week, too. So.
Oh.
Wait.
Well, then that's probably just a good idea anyway.
You went without the internet and your wife for a week?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I couldn't do
that.
I
read a lot.
I couldn't do that. They would have to commit me into somewhere.
I read a lot.
No kidding.
I'll just say that's a lot of pizza for one man.
I actually ate a lot of pizza on Saturday and then didn't eat any more pizza. And then I actually got sick in the middle of the week. So
that's from a lack of pizza.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all right. Obviously, I see it now. Error of my
logic.
Ways.
That's what the law.
Hello? Uh-oh. Robert? Kidge? I think I got dropped. Everybody left me. Well, I guess it's, I guess that's a sign that I should end the show. There they are.
Okay. Ah, here we are. Huh?
There we are. Nothing you what? Nothing you what said happened? For the last 10 seconds got recorded, so.
Okay.
Okay. All I heard was static.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess this is a good place to end the show.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
If
sounds good to me.
Unless you have more to say. Does anyone have more to say?
I do not.
Oh, I remember. I had something more to say. I know we don't do a food. We don't do a food podcast anymore, Robert. But Sunday, this last Sunday, I went to a place in Louisville, Texas, and it's called Ham and Eggs. Anybody ever heard of this place?
No.
Well, we go in there and we sit down and we're really hungry and we go there for, it's like we have brunch. We have like, it's lunchtime, but we're having breakfast. It's not like at 10 o'clock, so it's not brunch time, but we're going to have breakfast for lunch. Got it?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we go in there, we sit down, there's five of us. I'm with my sister-in-law and my niece, and we sit down and I look over and Faith says, well, let's get, so we order and, we've been talking and catching up with my sister-in-law, my niece. So we're not really looking around at other people's tables or paying attention or anything, but we just order. And, they ordered, pancakes and they ordered, bacon and they did this. And I've been there before. So I kind of had a heads up what was going to happen. But I said, let's get a biscuit and gravy to share. And she goes, to share? She goes, I told the waitress, yes, we want one to share. And she goes, you can eat a whole biscuit and gravy myself. And I said, you see that over there? I looked, pointed at a table over there. I said, that's a biscuit and gravy. That's a biscuit here. That's a biscuit here. And she looked at me and goes, yeah, right. That's a loaf of bread. And literally the biscuits will fill up a normal plate. I mean, and they're about 6 inches tall.
Oh my gosh.
They're
huge.
Yes. They're about 6 inches tall and they're about, they're about 6 inches all the way around. They're just about, like a big, but it's square, you know, they're square. Mm. And that's how big the biscuits are. And then you they cut them in half and pour gravy and with sausage all over them. And that's pretty much a meal right there. So the food comes and I didn't think ahead of time, but both my daughter and my wife ordered pancakes. Now the problem with that is that the pancakes at this place are literally 12 inches in diameter.
Oh my gosh. Nice. It's like a medium pizza.
Yes. Nice. And they're about an inch thick. And you get two of them. And that's
How many of them?
Two of them.
Oh,
you get
wow.
two of them. And that's one order. So they both got an order of pancakes. which I'll tell you right now, 85% of them are still in my refrigerator.
Is this like where Paul Bunyan eats breakfast? I mean, what's the deal?
Well, it got famous because the cow football players would go there and eat. They would go there and eat before they went to Valley Ranch to practice or whatever. And so their motto is, they started this restaurant, nobody goes away hungry. Which, nobody goes away without feeling like they're going to throw up is really the...
If you're hungry, it's because you vomited.
Right.
And now you have no food.
We will wheel you out. So yeah, it's extreme. Now I ordered the breakfast tacos, which are, I mean, they're big, but they're not huge like the pancakes and the biscuits are. But anyway, it was very comical, and I did take a picture. And so if I know if you actually are on the internet, you can see them on Facebook. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for joining us this week. We've had a good chat. I hope that you've enjoyed it. Please tune in next week when we will take on a new topic and explore the principles of the Christian moral ethic a little further. Thank you, Kidge.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you
for taking time out of your day and away from your families to have a little fun with me. All right. Vios con Dios, everyone.
Bye. Vios con Dios.
And my music just, for some reason, when I don't know, it's like I have to I don't know what's going on. It's insane. All right. I'll cut all this out. Post edit, okay? All right.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you never edit. You don't even know how to edit, do you?